That's what we'll start exactly at 1:30. That's one norm that I want to establish in the beginning. We'll start on time at 1:30 and end no later than 2:30. And we'll meet every Tuesday unless otherwise announced. From now until, I guess, the next 4 months. I didn't look at a calendar, but there's a Hanukkah Tuesday we might not meet. I don't know if you have yeshiva then or not. There may be some other Tuesdays along the line that I can't make. But unless there's an announcement to the contrary, we'll meet every Tuesday straight through. A little later today, when everybody gets here, I'll talk a little bit more about the organization of the class, tests, or papers, grades, and all of those important matters. I will pass around the sheet of paper which I'll ask you to sign into, because I mean, that for sure is one requirement of the course, that you be here a sufficient percentage of the time so that you can know the material if you're at least half awake. I'd like to, though, before we get into the details of the course, pick up where we left off last week, which is, Bekitzer, what we're going to be doing is looking at Jewish history from 1492 until the Shoah, until the Holocaust. And a little bit, perhaps, toward the end, we'll focus on the post-Holocaust period, which, of course, includes today. The reason I'm sectioning off the history from that point on is because 1492 and the expulsion of the Jews from Spain and the discovery of America and whatever else was going on in Jewish life at that time signals a very big transition point. A big shift. And B, if you go from 1492 to 1992, we have 500 years. So we're looking at an even 500 years of history. I mentioned last week that this is not my field of expertise. I've never had a course in my life on Jewish history. But I agreed to teach it because I've always been interested in it. And I've read a lot of Jewish history, and I've read a lot of other things that can be weaved into Jewish history. But also because I figured this would give me a chance to tie some of these things together and to make sense myself as to what Jewish history means, the important parts of it, especially the past 500 years, and especially, and maybe I didn't stress this enough last time, we are living now, at the end of these 500 years, in a period, in a time, a year, where there's a tremendous amount of important historical changes that are going on, so it seems. And some of them have to be understood. In order to understand where we are here in Toshin Nun Beis, you have to understand some of the background of some of the things that are happening today. And some of them go back as far as 1492, but to the fact that we're in America. Some of them don't go back quite that far, but go back to other major events in the history of the past 500 years. The Russian Revolution, the beginning of the return of Am Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, the wars of the century, Holocaust for sure, the history of Zionism, and the history of Torah. Now, Torah copes with these events. So, what I listed last week was four organizing phrases that can help organize the way we look at all of this history. We could read literally hundreds of books about this time, and you could learn this person lived in these years, and this event happened in this year, and these people lived in this country, and there was this war, and there was this destruction, and this suffering, etc. But to put it all together, to make some sense of it, I'm going to suggest four organizing principles. They are Yisrael Ben Ha'amim, Galus Geula, the history of Torah, Torah as a historical force, which I hope to explain a little bit more about today, and the social and economic and political conditions of the Jews throughout these times. And again, by way of summary, Yisrael ben Ha'amim, there is the Yisodos of Chazal, that Yisrael ben Ha'amim, that's Kaseth and Shivim Ze'evim, like a sheep among 70 wolves. We're always throughout these 500 years, we're always faced with the Ze'evim, with the wolves, with our enemies. Number one, and number two, we're always alone. We're always Se'echod ben Shivim Ze'evim. We're just alone. The isolated state of the Jewish people is something, of course, as you find in Torah, in the Torah, that we're an Am that's Badod, that's alone, that's isolated. But from the point of view of history, especially in the past 500 years, it's almost freakish how alone we are. Other nations of the world have allies, connections, everything else. Am Yisrael somehow is always alone. Whether they want to be alone or not, but they always end up alone. Number one. And the other Yisod of the Gemara Darshins and the Pasuk Lecha Hashem Hatzdoka, that Sedoka Osa Hashem Shepizron Bein Ha'umos. Sedoka Osa Hashem Yisrael. Hashem did a tzedaka for us by scattering us, by spreading us among all the nations of the world. And we'll see, I spoke a little bit about last week, how this happens. Whenever there's a catastrophe. For Jews in one part of the world, there's always Jews somewhere else in the world who are pretty much okay. This happens again and again and again. And this brings us, of course, to the second concept, which is all Kiddush to you, and that is that history, the history of Am Yisrael, has to be looked at in terms of the concepts of Golos and Geula. That even the past 500 years, beginning in 1492, which is already more than 1400 years after the Churban. Even then, in 1400 years after the Churban, there's an aspect to everything that goes on that's Golos. And, as we'll start to see a little bit more today, there's also an aspect of everything that goes on that's Geula. There's a process of Golos going on, and the process of the Golos from the old, from the Churban, from the Bayis Sheni. There's also a process of Geula as we move toward the Moshe Mashiach, we move toward the time of Geula. And even though these are religious concepts, Golos and Geula, but I think any historian looking at the fact of history has to think of these two things too, as happening. If you don't use these two concepts, you're really not being fair to the facts. So a secular historian might say, Galus, Geula, those are theological concepts. I don't have to think about those. I just have to look at secular concepts of history. But just to understand the processes, these concepts are helpful from a historical point of view. That's what I want to stress. I didn't speak enough, maybe last week, about the fact, I think it's a fact, that up until relatively recently in Jewish history, most historians were either secular Jews or Goyim. Traditional Jews, from Jews in general, did not write history books. And there are some outstanding exceptions to this. There's a sefer which I'll record today and show to you called Tzemach David, which is a mamash history book written by a contemporary of the Maharal Prague. And it's a fascinating history of some of the period that we'll be talking about. And he was not only a kosher or a yid, but it seems to be that he was a big Talmud Chacham as well. And he was a historian. And there are other works like this in the first 400 of these 500 years. But they're very, very rare. The Jews, for all kinds of reasons, traditionally didn't write history books. So that a lot of the material that's been written over the years is written by secular historians who, as theories of history always tell you, history is very much what the historians make of it. And who decides which events are important, which events to record, which events not to record? The historians themselves. So for all you know, when you read a history book, you're getting just one point of view of what really happened. Maybe they're leaving out all sorts of events. You know, everybody has his bias. In the past 100 years or so, that started to change, and we started to see from Jews, traditional Jews, Talmidei Chacham in certain cases, big Talmidei Chacham in other cases, begin to write books of history. So that by this point in time, it can be said, something which couldn't have been said even 25 years ago, that there is a literature out there of books that have chashivos, that are historically solid, and that also have hashkafa, which is in tune with Torah. And hopefully I'll be mentioning some of them, but as you know, and probably no more than me, the person who has been very responsible for the past 10 years or so for bringing Jewish history to the consciousness of the yeshiva frum world has been Rabbi Wein from Muncie, whose tapes, you know, are out there, and who's become quite an expert in history, in Jewish history, and now written a book, a big, thick book, which I certainly recommend to you very much, on Jewish history. It's called From Triumph to Tragedy, I think, is the title.
Triumph of Survival.
I'll try to bring that in also to show you what it looks like when we discuss it. He covers a big part of the years that we're talking about. He starts later than we're starting, but it's an excellent book. If I had to assign a textbook for this course, that probably would be the textbook. But since it must cost about $40, a big book with pictures and everything, so I don't want to say, you know, go out and buy it. But that would be a very helpful book. But what I'm going to kind of hold you responsible for is for the material and the approach that we present here. Again, emphasizing that this is my approach, and the thing that I'm not going to be so good on is dates and places and things like that, specific facts. But hopefully we'll give you a general overview of these 500 years. The secular historian, to get back to my point, wouldn't write about Golos and Geula as being principles of history, whereas someone like Rabbi Wein, or before him, other historians who thought in ways that conformed to Torah, of course, think of history in terms of Golos and Geula. The third organizing principle is the Torah itself. And here, I mean Torah in a different way than you know, discuss Torah in a base medrash. I mean Torah as a force in history. Just looking at the historical aspects of Torah. In Jewish history, you can look at Jewish history by looking at the rise, I can't say the fall, but the rise of Torah and the decrease of Torah. There are generations when Torah is on the wane. There are generations when Torah is on the rise. Every event in Jewish history is tied together with the growth or the loss of Torah. We'll get into more details toward the very end, but the best example is in our own lifetime, or in my own lifetime. World War II was a tremendous blow for Torah, but everything, every aspect of Jewish history since World War II can be seen in terms of Torah trying to regrow and rebuild. And that's one way, probably the best way of looking at the past 50 years of Jewish history. It's Torah as a force in history. And look at that, especially today. The other aspect I wanted to mention, I mentioned last week, is that when you speak of source material, historians need sources. A person wants to study life in Chveis in 13th century Italy, so he has to have sources. He has to go to museums, he has to go to old records, he has to read books written by people who lived at that time, he has to see the art of that time, the music of that time. And out of all of that, he can build his history. He has to go to the sources. What are the sources of Jewish history? That's a big problem, right, for a lot of historians. Because the traditional kinds of sources, I want to go and study Germany in the 1850s so I can make a trip to Berlin. And even though it suffered a war, There are still records and archives and books and notebooks and diaries, etc., of people who lived then. But when it comes to Jewish people, it's very, very hard to do that. If you want to write now a history of the Spanish, of the Jews who lived in Spain, let's say from the 1200s to the 1400s, you can go in Spain, you'll look a long time before you find even a trace of the fact that Jews lived there. Because generally, when Jews left the country, first of all, Jews leave the country. Germans don't leave Germany, and Spaniards don't leave Spain. But Jews left Spain and left Germany, number one. And number two, they were generally, their history, culture, the records of the civilization are lost. Or lost in the main. And one of the big efforts that historians have to do is to try to find these sources, to recreate them. And it's not so easy. Even if you want to study Jews in Poland, where there was so much to be studied, and they were there for 1,000 years. But go to Poland today. You know, the Jews were destroyed. It was a systematic attempt to kill every Jew and every trace of every Jew. And you go back to cities where Jews lived, then you're lucky sometimes if you find where the cemetery was and a couple of gravestones. All the material, the archives, the shuls, the records, the diaries, the minutes of meetings, the little notebooks that the Gaboyim used to keep about who died and who was born in the shul. So much of this is lost, but the sources are missing. Although, as I hope to show you, there's often some very striking finds. And you find certain things, certain sources that are very, very unusual and helpful in reconstructing history. But one interesting source that we'll be using, for something I'm a little bit familiar with, is the Torah itself, especially the Shalos HaTshuvos. The Shalos HaTshuvos that were written over, well, I guess from the time of the Gemara, there were Shalos HaTshuvos, down to today, but the Shalos HaTshuvos of the 500 years we're studying now are especially interesting because they offer, the Shalos especially, and the Tshuvos also, offer a lot of facts about how Jews lived. If you read the Shalos HaTshuvos of Marshal and the Maharam and the Ramah, etc., you will get learn a lot about how Jews lived in Poland in the 1500s and 1600s. If you learn the Shalos HaTshuvos of the Chasam Sofer and the Ksav Sofer and the Maram Shik, you learn a lot about how Jews lived.